Hi, everyone, and welcome to Happy Paws, presented by Fear Free. Happy Paws is a podcast by pet lovers for pet lovers. We take a scientific and evidence-backed approach to helping you understand your pet on a deeper level. I'm your host and lead animal trainer for Fear Free, Mikkel Becker. I am incredibly excited to be joined by my friend, Natalie Greco, who is also incredibly talented in the pet space. She is a superstar in terms of everything that she's done to help pets. She's a certified veterinary practice manager. She's a corporate account specialist for Fear Free, so it's fun we get to work together. And she's also founder of the nonprofit Petiquette. So welcome to the show, Natalie.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
We just got back from a trip together, didn't we?
We did. A trip of a lifetime.
Yeah. We got to go down to Jackson Hole and just got to experience all that Wyoming offered. And what was your favorite part of our trip?
I would say, well, the video that we made will always be near and dear to my heart. I can't wait to watch it live. So that was really fun. And just hanging out and being goofy with you. It was so much
yes.
fun.
Yeah. We have so much fun. The video that we created is What is Fear Free? And we did a lot of different things on like what we are as people and as someone who works for Fear Free. Do you want to explain a couple of the things that we did that kind of express that we're going to show on TikTok and
yes.
probably elsewhere too?
Yes. I love the part where I come out of my car dressed in some crazy animal attire and cats and dogs are life. And
yes, exactly. And we had so much fun.
Yeah, we did. And of course, that really nice woman walking with her sweet dog got to give her props for using a leash.
Yeah. So that's what we're going to talk about today, actually, is leashing your dog and why that's so important. And why did that make you excited to see someone with their dog leashed, especially when we were in that area of Jackson?
Because it seems like a cultural thing there where there's so many dogs off leash. And we had talked about what if we had our dogs there? And it would have been really uncomfortable. Like it would have kind of wrecked our time to always be worried about off-leash dogs coming up to us. So to see her to see a local leashing her dog, I wish it was more frequent for sure.
Yes, that it was a very interesting experience to be down there in Jackson where it was a cultural thing where a lot of dogs were off leash. People would be in coffee shops or different areas and just the dogs are kind of wandering around outside waiting for the person. And
yeah.
It was really different because those dogs are really at risk for getting hit, being taken, all of these different things. And also I had actually thought about bringing my dog Indiana Bones and he may have been okay, but that would have been really upsetting for him to not be comfortable and to not know these dogs that would just rush up to him. And that's what dogs would do to one another. And we definitely saw a lot of dogs that weren't super comfortable with that.
Yes. So, especially, I remember when we went and got our bagels at that little shop and that Doberman that was like trying to get inside and people had to be cautious and like move around him because just like not all dogs like to say hello, not all humans like to be greeted by a dog either.
Yes, that's a really, really great point. And one thing I don't think people always think about too is whatever their dog does, even if they aren't there with their dog, they are still responsible for that. So say that that dog is uncomfortable, which that dog was, if someone reaches down and pets that dog and the dog isn't comfortable, say that they snap, they bite, that person's going to be held accountable for that.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And that's one thing that people may not necessarily think about. Or same thing with the dog that runs up off leash in these areas that are leash zoned. So a lot of places have leash laws in place. And if your dog runs up, it's even if your dog is friendly, it doesn't always mean
that the other dog is going to be friendly, right?
Absolutely. 100%.
Or as you said, or that that person's going to be comfortable with other dogs, with new dogs. And there are a lot of people, some of my friends even, who have kind of a lifelong fear of dogs. They had a negative experience early on in their life, and it takes them a while to warm up to a dog.
Absolutely.
Just the same way that that dog that's leashed, it may take them a long time to warm up to another dog.
Yep, absolutely. 100%.
So what inspired Petiquette? Explain what Petiquette is, what inspired it, the whole story behind it, and why leashing your dog is so important to you.
So Petiquette is inspired by my angel boy, Sniff. He was my black lab that had been with me through all of my life events as an adult. So he was my everything. He was my only constant in life for a long time. And he was attacked so many times by off-leash dogs that he just developed a distrust of them. And he wasn't even reactive in that he didn't care if other dogs were around him. But as soon as they invaded his space and got in his personal bubble, he stood up for himself because he thought he had to. And I think he also was protecting me too. He thought that he was, you know, doing his job at that point. And so I just got so exhausted from feeling so the PTSD of being involved in, you know, dog attacks it's hard. It's a lot. And I was able to do a news story in my hometown of Fargo, North Dakota, and they wanted to interview me on leashes because unfortunately a little girl had been attacked by an off-leash dog. And so when I gave my story, they edited it down so much that all they included was, it's important to leash your dog. And when that came out, I was honestly kind of devastated because I was so passionate about this topic and it didn't show through in the story. So I was like, I'm going to do something about this. And I created a flyer. It's a leash etiquette flyer. And it just outlines, you know, why it's dangerous to not leash your dog and what can happen. And I actually submitted that flyer to the Vetti Awards, and I won a silver medal Vetti Award for that flyer. And what a Vetti Award is Excellence in Animal Health Marketing. And that was awarded to me at BMX in 2020. So that was a really cool experience just to see that this is a needed resource. And then I branched out and make yard signs as well. And kind of the tagline is, not all dogs like to say hello, and that's okay. Hashtag leash etiquette. And so the mission of Petiquette is to empower pet parents to advocate for their pet's emotional well-being. And because the leashing your dog isn't just about leash laws, it is protecting your dog's emotional well-being. It's keeping them safe. It's keeping people safe. It's just the right thing to do. And it's really heartwarming when people come to me and they thank me for, you know, being there for them, or at least empowering them to, maybe it's their spouse that maybe they don't always align with that. I've seen that quite a bit where the same family members have a conflict internally of one person not feeling like leashing is important. And now they have a resource to, you know, kind of back them up and to help them prove their case.
Yes, I love that. So let's break down your experience a little bit with Sniff and how that escalated. How did it start? So what was it, was he okay with other dogs from the start? And then, okay, so let's hear what happened.
Sure.
And what other people's reactions were, their dogs, your reaction. And then, yeah, because I think your experience is probably going to be really similar to other people's that have experienced similar issues. And I know I have as well.
Absolutely. Yes. He used to be quite all right with other dogs. We used to have, you know, play dates with my friends and their dogs. And it just got to the point where having an off-leash dog come up and, you know, even if it was a little dog off-leash would run up and start nipping at his legs. You know, that obviously legs are pretty sensitive on a dog, or, you know, in their paws. And so I'm sure it hurt. And so I remember that was one of the first ones where he, you know, kind of lashed out. He didn't injure the other dog, but it was vocal and, you know, still scary. And then just the other times going to the park, like to a local city park that is not a dog park. And to have all these dogs come up to us, and he would feel threatened. And then there was a really traumatic, actually couple very traumatic experiences that was kind of the last straw for both of us. We were walking in our old neighborhood, which was near the city downtown. And there was, this was a block away from my house. So it wasn't even like venturing into unknown, you know, territory. And there was, I always am cautious about people going up to doors, garage doors opening, because I just expect to see a dog bolting out. And my worst fear occurred when we were walking by a house and a person was going up to knock on this other person's door. They opened it and their dog came bolting out and came charging at us and beeline towards Sniff, attacked him on the ground. I was on the ground with him trying to break it up, and luckily a man happened to see what was going on, and he came over and helped me, and my shoes even flew off because it was such a, I don't know when they flew off, but it was just such a traumatic experience. And thinking back on it, I mean, I'm very lucky that I didn't get attacked. You know, when dogs are trying to defend themselves, that's when, you know, displaced bites can happen without it, you know, of course not meaning to. So I was really lucky with that. And then 9 months went by and it happened again with the same dog. And this time I called the police, because clearly the pet parent wasn't equipped to, you know, to safely look after their dog. And the police investigated, and they had put their small child in charge of watching that dog in the yard. And obviously that wasn't appropriate. And, but I didn't want anything to happen to the dog, or to the people. I just wanted them to learn. I wanted them to realize that they needed to be more careful. And from what I know, it never happened again. So hopefully it made a difference.
So in your experiences, when people like had like the small dogs that came rushing up to sniff and were biting at his legs, or you had the incident with the bigger dog, and maybe that was a little different because maybe you didn't see the person that was there watching the dog, if that was a child, how did people react? Were they apologetic? Was it just like, oh, they're fine? Or what was your experience?
It was really kind of both. It's just sometimes people would be like, oh, they've never done that before. That drives me crazy, that response. And sometimes they would be very apologetic. And other times they wouldn't even say anything. They wouldn't even acknowledge it. They wouldn't even try to help. And that is infuriating because that has happened to me a lot of times, more times than I can even remember, where a person just let it, they just watched it happen. And that's, you know, people can do better.
Yes.
People can do better.
And this is coming from a person who is the most lovable, kind, you love everybody kind of person. Like on our trip together, it doesn't matter what people do. Like you just are so incredibly kind and you just like radiate this kindness. And I remember we were going to a concert together at the Head and the Heart, and there were some people that were being really rude. And most of the time I would say I'm pretty nice too, and I'm known for being nice, but I also have that side of me that has a little bit of a temper. And so this lady was being really rude. And so I started to stand up for us. And I've never actually been in a physical fight in my life, but I was like, you know, my hackles were up and I was just ready to go. And then there you were just like, oh my God, what's happening? And I asked you later what was going to happen. Like if that lady had tried to fight me and you know, if you would have jumped in to back me up, and you're like, no, I probably just would have been like, okay, guys, calm down. I'm going to separate you. And I mean, you are definitely seriously like, I mean, truly the nicest person I've ever met in my entire life. So
Mikhail,
I bet it took a lot for you to get to that point of being so upset that you
yes.
are like, yeah,
yes.
you're a woman on a mission from this, aren't you?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you. That is, that's something that I struggled with, was finding my voice when off-leash dogs would approach us. For many years, I almost felt shame. Like I felt shame that you know, something like a conflict happened, or you know, and I wouldn't speak up. I would just freeze. And I think with my multiple sclerosis as well, I think that type of trigger is a lot harder for me to cope with. Like when an off-leash dog would come up to us, I would literally just feel like I was going to collapse. Like there are times where I thought I would. And so I just like shut down. It was, you know, fight, flight, or freeze. And I chose the freeze for quite a long time. And then I just, once when I started to raise awareness about leash etiquette, and it was empowering to myself as well. And I coached myself through it. Like, next time, say something. Next time, tell the person that, you know, they need to put their dog on a leash. And so I gradually worked up to that. There was one time, and I carry my flyers around with me many times when I walk, because you never know when you might need to give somebody a lesson. And there was a group of high school kids, and they were letting their dog run rampant. And the dog came after us. The dog charged us. And, you know, that is an aggressive type of, you know, that's an intimidating type of behavior for, you know, it's for dogs, that's threatening. And so they thought, oh, it's just so funny, like they're, you know, I'm like, no, like, and I took my flyer and I threw it at them, And I'm like, here's some education about why what you're doing is dangerous. And luckily, again, like good Samaritans, if you're out there and you have helped somebody in a situation like this, where dogs are going at it, or you know, you just have a feeling that that person or dog needs help, thank you, because you make a difference. That is, it's really, I'm just so grateful for the people that have helped me when I've needed help with separating dogs. So yes, it's tough to find your voice sometimes, but definitely you're the one that, you know, we need to protect our dogs. We need to use our voice, you know, and so I'm glad that it's helped. Being able to do that has actually improved my confidence too.
So when it comes to telling people, hey, my dog needs space, and like you said, sometimes it happens so fast. And when you're explaining that situation of another dog rushing up to your dog, as you said, that's really rude in doggy language to not give a little bit of time. A lot of times there's a lot more approaching at an angle, doing more circling, taking a little bit of time to warm up to each other, giving each other space. But when that other dog is on a leash, they're incredibly restricted. So you take away their option of flight. So what are they going to do? A lot of times they may freeze, but a lot of times that freeze will escalate into fight. And so that becomes their primary mode of protecting themselves. So a good offense becomes their best defense. And so, as you said, it's really important for us to be able to speak up. How have you handled that? How did your response, because I love how you said you taught yourself and you encourage yourself to be more assertive. How did your assertive gestures or words, how did that improve over time? And what would you suggest to other people?
Love that question, because yes, at first it was really just like it wasn't effective. It was just like me trying to be loud. And then it progressed to being more just assertive and, you know, like my dog doesn't like to say hello to other dogs. Will you please come get your dog? And, you know, more of an explaining the reason why it's dangerous. I think that approach is a lot more effective than just yelling at somebody, because they're not going to learn anything if you're just yelling at them. So put, you know, shift the blame. You know, it's like, it's not my fault your dog is off leash and running up to us. It's your fault. You can control that. So, you know, turning it around and holding them accountable for what they're doing, that's what's important.
Yes, definitely. And a couple other ideas that I've gotten through the years with dog training and classes or with individuals is sometimes too, is as you mentioned, like really speaking up. And sometimes it's that other dog is coming at you and, oh, my dog's friendly. Well, my dog's not friendly. Like, and you know, we can talk about those leash laws. That's an important one. So, and that's something you can also, you know, we can also call the cops on someone for that. And not that it always has to escalate to that level, but sometimes it really does, because it is a danger to that dog. It's a danger to other people. It's a danger to your dog. And so it really does need to escalate sometimes. And I know in my neighborhood here in Spokane on the South Hill, that happens a lot with a lot of different dogs that are leash dogs. They're out walking that get attacked by off-leash dogs. So it's a big deal, really big deal. And even if that other dog is somewhat friendly, say that they go rushing up to that dog becomes defensive, they start aggressing, it can turn into a really big brawl. And so even that somewhat friendly dog, supposedly, it can turn into this really negative interaction. So it really is helping to protect that dog, helping to protect ourselves. And a couple of other ideas that I have found through the years, I'd love it if you have any other ideas too on this, is, so there's the idea of the yellow leash. Have you heard of that before? Yes. So the yellow leash is supposed to signal to give your dog a little bit more space. So I love that for people that are educated and have that awareness. So, but it's also sort of like that thing with the orange collars on cats is supposed to be an indoor cat that got outside. It's one of those things that you don't know it if you don't know it. And so the yellow leash can be helpful, but the people that probably know the yellow leash signal, meaning that dog needs space, are probably going to have a little bit better etiquette in the first place. It's a great idea, and hopefully it will pick up a little bit more the more the people are aware of it. But some other things too is to even have like an in-training badge on your dog's leash. My dog Otis, we got him when he was 7 months old. We were his fifth home by that time, and he is highly reactive. He's a hot little mess, but like so loved, and he's come a really, really, really long ways. But also, if people get in his space bubble too fast, too soon, or if another dog does, like he's going to get really upset. And even if there isn't a physical injury, for him, it can be an emotional injury because he's such a sensitive little guy. So I found having the in-training badge on his harness, on our leash, even their vest that the person can wear. And especially for times when someone maybe is a little bit less confident being assertive, or they're practicing being more assertive with really being able to advocate for their dog, that can sometimes be helpful. And with some of those dogs that I'm walking that maybe they do have more aggression towards other dogs, but they still need to get out and get their walks, and, you know, and that off-leash dog may run up, or that person may be walking with their dog and want to run up and say hi and, you know, let their leash dog run up and do that, which for me is also another big no-no, because both dogs are not going to be as polite on leash as they would be in a safe and appropriate off-leash situation, such as in a larger fenced area or something like that, where they're introduced more gradually. But in that situation too, it's just really important to, you know, be able to signal, hey, my dog needs space. And one way that I've found too, on top of the badges and vests and things that we can use for us or for our dogs, is also sometimes having a head halter on a dog for whatever reason. I think people are like, oh, that dog might not be friendly. And there are lots and lots of very, very friendly dogs that wear head halters. It looks just like a halter on a horse, but sometimes that can be helpful for people to be like, oh, maybe that dog isn't friendly. So that's just another little tip that I have found. And also teaching our dogs to wear basket muzzles is a really helpful skill and something that you can really teach from puppyhood. And so if you ever are uncertain how your dog is going to react, or you are in those situations where you are encountering off-leash dogs, that basket muzzle can be a really helpful tool. But it's unfortunate to have to need that when people aren't following those leash laws.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah, the visual cues are helpful for sure, to be proactive and, you know, try to prevent it from happening.
So what are some alternatives for those people that want to have that off-leash experience with their dog? What are some viable alternatives that are going to keep that dog safe, other dogs safe, and people safe?
Well, if you must, you know, utilize your dog parks, fenced in places where people are, you know, that's the expectation of that other dogs may be running up to your dog. Those, I'm not necessarily an advocate for dog parks, because there can be a lot of, I've seen a lot of instances where dogs that maybe aren't socialized, and I think the pet parents bring their dogs there as kind of an, you know, easy exercise of just, you know, letting them run free, but they're maybe not conditioned and trained properly, and so that can change a dog's experience there too. But there are other alternatives. I mean, go to, I think there's some parks that allow that. And again, if that's the expectation, if you're attending a place that is leash optional, then at least you know what, you know, you're aware of that and it's not a surprise. But yeah, I personally don't like the off-leash experiences because dogs are animals ultimately, and you cannot guarantee their behavior. And it's not, to me, I wouldn't feel safe at not having my dog on a leash. I want to know that I am able to, you know, protect him from any type of you know, danger. I wouldn't want him. My worst fear is my dog getting lost. I think that would just be, I don't know how I could cope with that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's extremely traumatic, I will say, from my own experience, where I was on another girls trip, this time with my mom, and our little dog Otis, my dad had left him in the car with the AC on. It was only maybe a couple of minutes, but he had unrolled the window, found a way with the window lock. It had unrolled the window. And, you know, dad went out with a second set of keys to go get in the car after dropping something off at a friend's house. And window was partway down and only two of the three dogs were still in there. Otis was gone and he took off and we had reports of him running across the highway. And Otis, like this little, he's 18 to 22 pound little pug, Brussels Griffin, Pekingese, Chihuahua kind of mix. And so cute, but he was outside. I mean, he's very fearful. Otis, it takes him a while to warm up to new people. And so when people were calling for him, because we had basically the whole town of Bonners Ferry out looking for Otis, because I mean, I was desperate and, you know, we did whatever we could to try and find him, but it was awful. I was ready to just drive back immediately. My dad is out looking for my brother and flyers all over town. And actually the place where they finally found him, it was literally like a godsend that someone just happened to see him in this one area. And they had a bear that had actually been frequenting that area in this one neighborhood. And so where Otis was where this bear had been sighted, but he was lost for, it was overnight. He had one night outside. He had to survive out in the woods in that area where that bear was. And thankfully, my dad just had this feeling after hearing this report of where Otis was sort of sighted, but still we were calling for him and he wasn't coming. And my dad just by providence just thought, hey, I should go look down in this one area in this little gully. He just had this feeling and he went down there and thankfully he had some of the dogs with him. So including his little heart dog, Cutie Pie. And so thankfully he had the dogs with him because I think Otis at that point, he was just running scared. When they're running scared, they are not in their right mind. And so, you know, even like having treats or anything, Otis wasn't coming for anything. But when he saw Cutie Pie, he at least came out from under the bushes and started to approach. But he was so terrified. And thank God, with the use of the dogs, he was encouraged to come up to my dad. And finally, they were able to get him and take him home. But that was a really traumatic experience. And that's one of the reasons why I always keep a GPS and cellular collar on him now. So that way, if he ever does get lost in the future, which God forbid that ever does happen, I at least have a way of tracking him and finding where he's at. Yeah, it was super, super scary. And that's one thing to look at too. If you do have a dog that likes to run or even a dog, Otis wasn't known for running. He just was scared, whatever caused him to jump out of the car. And then probably from there, he's just terrified, overwhelmed, and just started to run and was, you know, just running for his life at that point. But at least up in Bonners Ferry, Idaho, where there is not great cell service in certain areas, that's where it's really important to have both that GPS and that cellular tracking. Because if you use something like an Apple Tag, for instance, you are only going to be able to track it so far. So if you are out in the wilderness area, good luck finding your pet. And that's definitely something that I've experienced. So I'm just a huge advocate for that. For that reason. But yeah, as you said, I mean, something can happen in just a split second. And even the most well-trained dogs, you just never know, because there could be something just enticing enough to send them flying or scary enough to send them flying. And it can be really hard to get them back at that point. So what would be your response in a situation like you had, where you had that dog that ran up and started to attack Sniff and is, you know, like physically after him, how would you separate that dog from Sniff? Or how, in general, how would you separate a dog that runs up and starts attacking your dog?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so, it's hard because I don't think that there is a 100%, you know, it depends on the situation. And, you know, if your dog is small enough to try to, you know, pick your dog up, you know, if, especially before, if you sense some danger, you know, pick up your dog and try to, like, you know, move your body to form a barrier. But it's tough because, of course, your safety is important too. So you don't want to jeopardize your own safety. But, you know, me personally, I'm getting in there as your, the example of the head and the heart. I would get in there and I would break up a fight.
Yes.
And the same goes for, you know, the same goes for dogs too. I would try to, and that's where another set of hands is so vital. If you have somebody that can help you, you know, one, take one dog and another take the other dog. But it's tough. I know there are, I've seen like, there are like boards where, like you can actually like put them in front of the face and, you know, try to create a barrier that way so they can't actually like latch onto each other. But again, like how practical is that? Like you can't necessarily take that on every walk you go on. But yeah, trying to use anything you have on you to try to get them to stop. If you have some treats on you, some food, try to divert attention just enough to get them separated. And yeah, it's really hard. I don't think there's a, you know, an exact answer on what to do every time.
Yeah. As you mentioned, so those panels, so like a lot of times they use them as like pig sorting boards. So you can use that, or they have some specific for dogs. But those are huge. So that's not a practical thing to be taken out there with you on a walk, but you may see that more in a shelter or in a daycare facility, potentially. Other things that as a dog trainer, you definitely want to have on hand, but it's not something you are necessarily going to have just with you, is a bite stick. So that's something that if one dog really does latch on and they are not letting go, it's essentially a way that you can pry that dog's mouth open. But that's also not something that every person is going to have on them. And definitely not something I take on every walk with me. If I'm working with specific dogs in a situation where that's needed, that's definitely something that I have, or it's definitely something you'd see in a shelter is a fight break kit. But some other things that can be practical, and the bite stick could be easier. You could take that out in a walk. Maybe that is something to consider, especially if you do live in an area where that's more of a risk. But some things that I take on my walks with me are, I do like to take, so either like a spray can of air or a citronella spray. So that's something that, you know, worst case scenario, so we can try all kinds of things. So a lot of times if we use a firm voice with that dog, if we, as you said, use treats, we can ask that dog to do something that maybe they know. So we can ask them for a sit. We can, you know, put a hand out in front, use more assertive body language, ideally get our dog back behind us. Or as you said, with the smaller dogs, or if you have the ability to utilize what's around you. So if you have a pickup truck, for instance, that's around you, we can pick up even some of our bigger dogs. We can get them in the back of that truck, you know, in that situation. Or for those small dogs, you may even utilize something literally like a trash can. Like, and that's it. All out emergency. This dog is coming at you. It's really aggressive and we are afraid for our dog's life. We may have to use something like that. And so we can utilize those physical barriers. Another thing that I do have on me, and that's more for people, but I do have my pepper spray and my bear spray. And it does help me to feel a little bit more confident, comfortable, but also definitely our cell phone for sure. And as you said, your voice. So getting help from other people, and sometimes also having another leash on hand with you. So having that slip leash, that's something, sometimes what I will take with me and always always have that in my car, but that's something to try and get control of that other dog. Because a lot of times you're probably going to have a lot better control over your own dog than you are that other dog. And so another thing that we can do too is, you mentioned things like with that redirected bite. So where the dogs are in a tussle and it's easy for them when they are overly aroused to even your own dog that may just turn in the midst of just that high excitement and high arousal, they may accidentally bite you. And so that's where we've got to be really careful with our hands and what we're doing there. But as you mentioned, if we can do it with just the treats and getting that other person or getting people nearby to help us, that's definitely ideal. And kind of worst case scenario, but it's good to kind of be thinking out, what would I do in this situation if something happened with my dog?
Exactly. Yeah. It's, I mean, just like any emergency, there's training, you know, it's good to try to be prepared.
So when it comes to pet care, are there any other aspects of pet etiquette that you are passionate about?
Yes, I am really passionate about pet loss. I am also a certified pet loss grief support specialist. So I worked at a clinic for 9 years before joining the Fear Free team, and I was a manager there. And one of my most fulfilling parts of my job was helping people through their loss. It's heartbreaking. But I think people need the connection with somebody that truly understands what it feels like to lose a pet. Because disenfranchised grief is real. That is when society doesn't accept or, understand really the feelings that are involved with pet loss. So, you know, people might have a really hard time at their job or even with their own family if the feelings aren't, you know, if they're not balanced. So I am always around to help people talk about their loss. You know, it can be really therapeutic just to discuss, you know, memories. And I think one of the most helpful things that I learned with getting certified as a pet loss grief support specialist was that, you know, it's okay to feel some type of relief if your pet has died from, you know, maybe they were sick. And like in Sniff's case, he developed, he had heart failure, and his medicine, I mean, it was like, even with my employee discount, it was like $400 a month. So, you know, and to see him suffer, you know, he was suffering. So when he was euthanized, you know, obviously it was one of the saddest, most awful times of my life. But because I had this training, I was able to, you know, eventually, believe me, it wasn't instant. I was able to eventually, you know, feel okay, you know, like this was something that it was, I had immense anticipatory grief when Sniff was still alive. It started when he was young. I mean, I don't even know when it started. It started years and years ago. But since he was so special to me and he was my constant, and I loved him so much, the thought of him not being here anymore was debilitating, and it robbed me of my joy in the moments. And I tried to, you know, talk myself through it and just be like, okay, this is a feeling. I felt it. I'll move on and, you know, focus on the present in the present moment. But, yeah, that anticipatory grief was awful. Then once when the event actually happened, once when he was euthanized, you know, I was like, okay, well, my worst fear has come true. Like my worst fear has happened, and I'm surviving. And, you know, I'm just glad that I have this support network, that people, my friends, you know, understand losing a pet is like, for me, it was like losing a child. Sniff was the equivalent to my child. And I'm also really passionate about pet bereavement policies in the workplace. So you can catch my Disrupt HR talk on Pets Are People Too, Why Disenfranchised Grief Disrupts Your Business. So that is available if you search Disrupt HR Fargo. And then my name, you should.
I'll make sure to link it.
Okay, great.
Yes, we'll go ahead and link it over. That's so important. And I love what you do with Petiquette. I love all the work that you're doing with Fear Free. And I love that that really ties all of that together with Sniff really being the inspiration for why you created Petiquette in the first place and why you started to advocate that not all dogs want to say hello, and that's okay. And yes, just how it helps you to better relate to people that are going through that grief. And as you said, it's so real. And for a lot of us, it can be even harder sometimes than it is for a human family member when our beloved pet passes.
Absolutely. Definitely.
Well, Natalie, I'm hoping to go on another girls' trip with you here soon. I'm planning on going to North Dakota. I've been to almost all of the states except for Alaska and North Dakota. So I'm going to come and visit you here soon. That's definitely in my plans. So
come in the summer.
I will, but we'll avoid some of that snow and the cold, hopefully.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Natalie. Love you so much, my friend.
And love you too.
We'll get together soon.
Okay, sounds good.
For everyone out there, be sure to leash your dogs.
Thanks for joining us on Happy Paws. We hope that you continue tuning in as we talk with top experts to explore evidence-based practices that promote both the physical and emotional health in the animals we love and care for. Make sure you subscribe to avoid missing out on any of our upcoming Happy Paws episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you took a minute and left us a review. For more content like this and much more, visit us at fearfreehappyhomes.com. Also, for veterinary and pet professionals looking to get Fear Free certified, check out fearfreepets.com and also check out our Fear Free podcast hosted by Steve Dale. Lastly, our music is by the fabulous Sherry Short. I grew up with Sherry in my hometown of Bonners Ferry, Idaho. Yep, only 2,000 people, but Sherry's made it big. She is incredibly talented, and I know that you will love her music just as much as I do. So check her out. Sherry with an I, Short, with this song, Feeling It, coming from her EP, Gotta Live Your Life. Sherry, I love you, girl. You make me proud, and you make all of Bonners proud. Until next time, I'm your host, Mikkel Becker, wishing you a fabulous, fear-free day.
I'm feeling it.